mind introducing Dana, but she feels like she's been up here a lot in the last 3 weeks. So she wrote most of this, I wrote some of this, and I'm reading it on behalf of us. In December, our writing group did a retreat in Victor, Montana. On a hike, we met the man whose cabin we were renting for the week. He told us to keep our dogs close by because hidden off the path were traps that could snap our mutts in two, and then smiling, he appraised us. A group of snowy women, pens in our pockets. So, he said, you came here to write your novels. He was also a writer. Indeed, we said. You're very smart to do it now, he said. It's much, much harder for women after they've had kids. Too late, said Dana. The following is a brief list of women who published their first book after having children. Kate Atkinson, Isabel Allende, Stephanie Meyer, joking, but I mean, she did it, but she's not the most. J.K. Rowling, Laura Ingalls Wilder, Annie Proulx, Alice Munro, Alice Walker. It's a good thing that besides being talented and tenacious, Dana doesn't hold much stock in unsolicited advice. In other walks of life, having two young boys would go unremarked upon, but this MFA program is notably childless. Only a very few among us have kids, and what with things like the top 20 under 40 lists everywhere, it's easy to think that the writing path is only for the unattached, which isn't so, not at all. But there is something that distinguishes Dana from the majority of us, and it's more than two little kids, two dogs, a husband, a job, and classes. It's something in the quality of commitment and the force of will. Dana often wakes at 5 a.m. to write the beautiful, elevated stories we've come to expect from her. And on the side, she runs marathons. Dana came into the first year like many of us, writing interesting, compelling stories that were, like many of ours, sometimes flawed. But by the end of the first semester, her stories contained the sort of magic that most of us are still trying to achieve. I remember a few of Dana's stories are out of this world rants I had. And when she started winning awards, naturally, there was curiosity. What does Dana write like? What kind of good are her stories? Her stories are clear-eyed and precise, her language both complex and understated, and her characters grapple with the big feelings: guilt, abandonment, bitterness, love, grief. While we can recognize our own emotions in them, they are unique in a bright, fascinating way. Her stories create the sort of seamless world that's almost difficult to read when you are reading for workshop. They fly through your hands. You are transported. You forget you are reading for workshop and that you have to critique them. This is the result of hard work, the early mornings, and marathon intensity. The last almost 2 years, Dana has shown us what it means to grant yourself permission to fulfill your own potential. Allow me to introduce Dana Fitzgale.
Thank you, Kiersey and Emma. Just got to adjust this to my height here. Well, apparently it's Oscar night, so I thought about wearing a long, sparkly designer gown tonight, but I don't actually own anything like that. So instead, what I'm going to do is make a big old thank you speech. And I kid you not, I really am, but don't worry, I hope you'll bear with me because what I'm going to read afterwards is really short. See, it's like almost microscopic, actually, so I have time, I figure. First, I just want to thank all of my fellow students and professors in the MFA program. Being in class with so many smart, talented students and so many brilliant teachers is, well, it's really scary, to be honest. I spent most of last year kind of paralyzed with fear, but it's also really inspiring, and so I just want to thank all of you for being your amazing and inspiring selves and for being willing to share a little bit of your knowledge with me. It's a rare gift. Pretty much the only complaint I have about this program is that they're going to force me to graduate eventually, because if I could just hang out here indefinitely, I probably would. Secondly, I wanted to thank the few friends and coworkers outside of the program who've shown up tonight. It really means a lot to me. Even if you decide to throw tomatoes, I'm still really glad you're here, so thank you so much. And finally, my family's over here, my husband John, my mom Linda, and my stepdad Roland. And I can't tell you how supportive they've been of this endeavor of mine to go back to school. They've spent countless hours watching the kids who are with the sitter tonight while I was off pretending to be a writer. So it's hard for me to express my gratitude without getting all choked up like a real Oscar winner. So I'm just going to say thanks and I love you. All right, on to my promised very short story. This is called Schooling. Arithmetic. Arithmetic is easy. $40 placed on the dapple gray, win, place, or show, equals a cool 300. Glory be. Dumont, your paraplegic father, peels 220s off the top and hands the rest to you for safekeeping. Off he wheels to buy a celebration liter of Crown Royal. You, meanwhile, will do some shopping at the IGA adjacent to the racetrack parking lot. Dumont subsists on Fritos and beef jerky, but lately you've developed a mild interest in nutrition, so you toss a box of whole wheat crackers in the cart, on top of boxed potatoes, powdered eggs, and tuna fish. Ignore the cashier when she asks how old you are and why you aren't in school this time of day. Back at the lot inside the Winnebago you call home, remember to tuck several bills into the zippered pencil case beneath your bunk. Don't worry, you can tell Dumont those groceries cost more than they really did. He never asks to see receipts. The remainder will be wagered on that blaze-faced chestnut in the 315, a horse called Lightning Finish, who will sadly prove unworthy of that name. History, a subject best ignored. You know full well it's better not to aggravate Dumont with questions on the subject of your mother, including who she was. She was 16 when you were born, that's all you know. And where she went or why she left before you had a chance to get acquainted. It is especially prudent not to avoid this subject when Dumont's been drinking, which is all the time. Geography. Dumont, possessing better social skills than most ex-jockeys, has become quite good at handling snoops and busybodies. He tells strangers, if they ask, that you and he are visiting from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. The two of you are in whatever town you're in to visit his wife's mother. You happen to be at the track because, like many girls your age, you have a thing for horses. So the story goes. The truth is, though you've lived at 18 racetracks in a dozen states, you've never even been to Tennessee, a place where gambling is illegal. Dumont just likes the way that word sounds, Murfreesboro. And besides, he figures, nobody's from there. Home economics. When supplies get low, mix extra water in the dehydrated milk. A little duct tape helps to keep the damp out of your boots. Make sure to check beneath the grandstands daily. You'd be amazed at how much spare change falls from race fans' pockets. Dumpster diving is undignified, unsanitary, best reserved for true emergencies like month-long losing streaks, or times when no one wants to pay a girl for odd jobs, pulling mains and cleaning stalls. Whatever happens, try your utmost not to touch the secret savings in your pencil case. Physics. 1,400 pounds of horse flesh coming around the curve, colliding with the rail at 30 miles an hour, will catapult a small-boned man at least 10 yards into the path of a whole field of thoroughbreds, which, moving on the same path at a roughly equal speed, deliver the force needed to obliterate a jockey's spine between the second and third lumbar vertebrae. A horse would never be allowed to suffer so. Health. If your father were a thoroughbred, he would be dead, and you, who've had the sore luck to be born a filly in this no-frills world, had better not forget to watch your back. Stick to the lighted portions of the stable yard. Befriend the oldest groom at every track in hopes that you'll remind him of his grandchild back in Guadeloupe. And if all else fails, recall Dumont's advice. A metal hoof pick makes the perfect implement for gouging eyes. Chemistry. Dumont's prescription pain pills mixed with gin can sometimes make him mean as snakes. It isn't that he wouldn't hit you if he could, but you are quicker, nimbler, having two good legs. Sometimes, when he believes you've been neglecting him because you've been out scrounging all day long to keep your bellies full, Dumont will howl that you are all the same, you females, treacherous and cruel. If you laugh, he is a spectacle, this tiny, raging, helpless man. He'll start in on his threats, the same ones you've been hearing all your life. He'll say, for instance, that he'll hunt you down and beat you senseless with a nickel-plated stud chain if you ever try to leave him like she did, ungrateful slut. When he starts talking this way, tip his wheelchair forward till he slides out. It won't be hard, he's such a featherweight. Be sure to clear the area of any objects he might throw before you leave him stranded on the floor to curse and flail until his eyes roll back. Then, place a folded sheepskin saddle pad beneath his head and gently, very gently, roll his body to one side. You don't want him to choke. Music. First, the trot, a pair of eighth notes alternating. The canter has a 3/4 tempo, like a waltz. The gallop is a symphony in 4/4 time and is the soundtrack of your father's dreams. You know this from the way his whip hand lifts and falls when he's asleep, and from the rhythmic spasms of his shoulder muscles. Art. A horse's breath is silver in the cold hours after dawn. Dumont and you are stationed in your customary place along the rail, between the first and second furlong markers. It doesn't matter that you watch the morning workouts every day, they still affect you. Every time a group of horses thunders by, you hold your breath. Your father grips the edges of his wheelchair, pushes up and forward, arms taut, neck out, like he's trying to fly. At times like this, you wonder if your secret plan requires courage or mere heartlessness. Biology. You learn this soon enough. Your teacher is a stable hand named Luke. Your classroom is an empty stall a week before your 16th birthday. You'll find the subject disappointingly simplistic at the start, but we'll be quick to see how it might help to further your ambitions. Philosophy. Sometimes, hungover, Dumont turns all misty-eyed and metaphorical. He rolls past the rows of horses in their stalls, comparing them to inmates in a jail. He reaches up to stroke the muzzle of some wild-eyed two-year-old who wears a sharp-edged metal yoke around his windpipe. He says he hates these goddamn cribbing collars. He tells you only captive horses have bad habits. All racehorses are cribbers, kickers, weavers, says Dumont, or biters. Who can blame them? Dumont shakes his head and mutters in a voice almost too low to hear that all caged things possess the memory of freedom. English. English hurts. The past tense of the verb to leave is left, as in, she left while he was sleeping, having slipped two ground-up pain pills in his drink. The antonym of love is loss. Betrayal is a synonym for daughter. Arithmetic. It all comes back to this. Combine that 1400 in your pencil case with the wad of C notes Dumont hands you for safekeeping after he finally hits the daily double. Add, subtract, the sum is equal to a brand new start in life. However things turn out, don't blame your math. Hold your equations firmly in your head so you won't falter as you tiptoe past his bunk, won't stop to watch his whip hand rise and hover. Think about the money. It'll last, so long as Luke's truck doesn't throw a rod in Escondido and he doesn't spend a bundle on his hitherto concealed cocaine addiction. These things, of course, may never happen, just as Luke may never leave you broke and stranded at some highway rest stop, in which case you can keep believing that you have an eye for winners. Either way, it doesn't change things. Doesn't change the fact that years from now, after you've given up on searching and have sworn off racetracks altogether, you'll still be convinced you hear him now and then. Not Luke, your father. You'll be walking down some street, your mind on other things, and all at once you'll think you hear his slurred voice calling you. Always and everywhere you'll hear him, cursing, spitting, aching to forgive. Thank you so much.